We're on letter Hey. It says like this.
They're different.
Rav Kook says like this. Ani lo epol mi madregati mishum netiya zara. Rav Kook says, I will not have a downfall. I will not fall, right? I won't feel down, Rav Kook says, from any desire. Sometimes a person has, you know, a desire to eat non-kosher food, and it makes him feel that he's not a good person. Or he has a desire to be with somebody that he's not supposed to be with, in a way that you're not supposed to be with, and he says, you know what, that maybe is an indication that I'm a bad person. Right? If I keep having these thoughts, if I keep having these desires, if I constantly think bad of everybody, well, this is an indication of who I am. And Rav Kook says, that won't happen to me. Ki eda ki kol hanefilot hem nidrashot, because I know that all of my downfalls are needed. Not only are my downfalls not negative, they're needed. They're needed. And there's not, it's not by random that we read Parshat Vayelech right before Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, where Moshe Rabbeinu says, Lo chalat od latzeit v'lavo, I can't come and go anymore. I don't have any more ups and downs. That's why I know I'm going to die. Because in life, you're always learning. You're always growing. You're always intrigued. You're supposed to be intrigued. You're supposed to test your limits. You're supposed to push yourself out of your boundary and learn from that. Now again, you know, we spoke about yesterday on Yom Kippur about trial and error, learning through mistakes. And one of the analogies that I gave was, you know, perfecting your jump shot. You're not upset when you miss, because that's an indication that you have to shoot better, you have to work at better. But if you're trying to miss on purpose, that's not going to help you at all, right?
Like Wayne Gretzky.
Right, no. So Wayne Gretzky said you're going to miss all your, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take.
You're supposed to keep on trying.
But I'm saying that you're not going to perfect your shot if you try to miss on purpose.
Right, okay.
Right, so if you're trying to miss, if you're trying to sin on purpose, echta ve'ashuv, that's not going to help you. It's only if you try to hit the basket and you miss, right, which chet means to miss, then you're going to grow. But if you get out there and you're shooting, you know, these stupid shots, you know, like we do sometimes when we're like, we're not aiming, we're not trying, we're chucking it up, we think we're Stephen Curry, and we're missing. That's not going to help you become a better player, because you're not even trying. It's only when you try to hit the basket and you miss that you can fix what you're doing. In life, missing is part of it, right? See, sometime in the beginning of any league, somebody has 100%, you know, field goal percentage, or, you know, pass yard percentage, or whatever it is. And at the end of the day, if you look at that person, usually it's because they shot one shot, right? They came in when their team was like either up by 30 or down by 30. They got the ball into the basket. They hit it. They have 100%. You're not picking that guy for your fantasy football, basketball, baseball team, because that's not what... Usually, a good player is a player who has, like, you know, like a 60, 70% field goal percent, right? If he's like 70% from the line, that's crazy, right? Hall of Famers, right, were like, they're not 80, 90% from the line. Person who's 80 or 90% field goal percentage, he's not in the Hall of Fame, because that means he didn't shoot enough to really make his percentage work. So you look at somebody, person not struggling, he has like a 90% success rate, okay, fine, you know, he's just not trying. Right? Maybe he's in YU, right? Maybe he's in Landers, right? But okay, fine, great. But he's not coming to your fantasy football team. Right? Maybe he never went to college. Maybe he stayed in Israel, right? Or you know what? He tried once, and that's it. And he gave up. He's not playing. He's not in the game anymore. Retired, right? How does the Space Jam end? Right?
Don't give away.
The white guy, what's his name? Who says, I don't want to play, I don't want to ruin my record, right? I'm undefeated, played one game.
Michael Scott.
Right, one game, I'm done, I'm undefeated,
no,
right?
Paul.
Wayne Gretzky, Michael Scott.
Whatever, Inachinami, Sham, Gzera Shava.
Is it Paul Newman?
Right? Yeah, say it.
Paul Newman, right? No.
He's making it.
Doesn't matter.
Paul Newman.
Doesn't matter. So the idea is, Rav Kook says, I'm not worried when I steer off my path. I'm not worried when I have desires that pull me out of my comfort zone, right? Because, you know, at the end of the day, you know, my brother, he's a very good basketball player. He used to pay me to play defense against him because he needed to practice. And he used to always tell me, he goes, I'm not paying you to stand there like an idiot. Stop me. And I was like, what do you mean? I think that's what I'm trying. Obviously, I wasn't even good enough to be a paid defender. But, you know, I eventually I got paid to get the rebounds, right? That was all I was really good for. But that's what it is, right? When you're really trying, when you're really practicing, you want the person who's playing against you to give it their all, right? You want to get better. And therefore, the fact that the Yetzer Hara is trying to taunt you and mess with you, that's fantastic. That's fantastic. Because as we've said before when we were learning Rav Kook, the Yetzer Hara doesn't mess around with D-leagues. So once you're in his game, once he's really testing you, you know that you're in the major leagues. And Rav Kook says, not only am I not worried, I know that the fact that Yetzer Hara is trying to push me out of my comfort zone is necessary. Liot tamid, right? Vim kol, vim ki me'od tzrichim leitametz liot tamid sharui b'matzav ha'ora, simcha, kdusha v'cheshek ha'torah v'avoda. Mikol makom gam kasher ya'avdu tzlalim v'aruach nekeret me'at v'pulotav kotzot yotzei la'poal. Before we continue, I'll explain that for a second. See, there's two kinds of basketball players. And any coach knows them. There's the guy who, when he misses a layup, runs back on D. And there's the guy who, when he misses the layup, falls on the floor and, you know, says, is fighting with the coach, with the ref, for 20 minutes for his innocence and allows the team to score on the other side. See, the coach really doesn't care if you missed or not. He only cares what your reaction is. Are you going to get back on D? Are you going to hustle? Are you going to try to get the ball back? Or are you going to blame other people? Right? And that's what it comes down to. So Rav Kook says, you know, when my Yetzer Hara pushes me out of my comfort zone and tries to test me and tries to get me to have thoughts that I know I shouldn't be having, you know what I do? I smile. I put on a happy face. Why do I put on a happy face when the Yetzer Hara is obviously messing with me? And Rav Kook says it's very simple. Because right now, the test is how I react to this. How, if I'm going to sin or not going to sin, that test is going to happen way down the line. But right now, when I finally tell myself, you know, it's a day after Yom Kippur, I'm finally going to get up for davening, or, you know, now it's like, I'm finally going to, you know, make sure to say bracha achrona, or I'm finally going to, you know, make sure to say thank you to the person who opened the door for me, you know, when I was walking into class, even though, you know, it's an automatic door, so who cares? Thank you, Mikey. And now it's when the Yetzer Hara is testing me. The question here is, how do I react? See, we are all subfacets of God. We are all chilek lokam mal. We're all an extended hand of God. Almost that I'm a glove for God. So if you tell me, I'm just a glove for God, I'm just an extension of God, so what does it matter if I sin or not? What does it matter what I do? Who cares? Right? And that's exactly, you know, what pantheism says. You know, God's everything. What does it matter? Do whatever you want. Be whoever. Who cares?
Spinoza.
Right? You're part of this great fabric of creation. And you know what Kabbalah says?
Pantheism.
So before panentheism, because panentheism is
for
those.
You also have
I'll explain. Let me just get to before panentheism.
Okay. Sorry.
There's a great concept in Kabbalah. Says that all we are, all we really boil down to, are our reactions. How you react to a situation is who you really are. How you react to that ball that you missed. How do you react to losing the ball when you're coming up the court? How do you react to the fact that you set an alarm clock and you didn't wake up? How do you react to the fact that your child says to you, no? How do you react to the fact that your wife, your girlfriend, your best friend says, you know, you've been a jerk lately? See, all arguments in marriage, in relationships, are because one person voiced something that bothers them and the person reacted poorly. Because when my wife says to me, Yonatan, you know, you said you're going to straighten up the house, the real answer is, shut up and straighten up the house. But what is my ego going to say? She's telling you to straighten up the house? She's been on her phone for the past 45 minutes just vegging on the couch. When you were giving the girls a shower and brushing their teeth, getting them in pajamas. Now, what are you talking about? Really? What have you been doing? Wait, what is that reaction? Ooh. How you react to situations tells everything about you. See, and that's why when you go to a job interview, they care very little about what comes out of your mouth, but really how it comes out of your mouth. What is going to be your association? You know, we have a good friend who graduated 2 years ago from here. His name is Aaron Block. And he developed a software, an application with another guy who is on the has a plaque on the building of the business school. And he works for Microsoft. And he had all his credentials ready. And he practiced for mock interviews for hours. And he went to the Microsoft interview and they just said to him, speak about something you're passionate about for 7 minutes. Totally threw him off. Because he was ready for an interview. And all of a sudden now he gives you a presentation. And you know what? He got the job. You know why? Because really what they cared about is not if he can answer all the right questions, but how he reacts on the spot to a different job, and does he take it with passion? And he had to speak about something he was passionate about, and he spoke about his software that he developed here in Maryland, and he got a job at Microsoft. Okay? Because at the end of the day, how you react is a lot about life. And Rav Kook says, so we're not going to talk after this. It's fine.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks, sir. Fine. We'll find out.
That means you're taking Tobe with you?
Potentially, yes.
We got 2 minutes left.
We got 2 minutes. Awesome. You're the best. So Rav Kook says, you see, when the Yetzer Hara annoys me, right? When it's Ne'ilah time, and all I can think about is how I'm tired, and it's sweaty, and I'm hungry, and I can't even focus on the words that I actually came here to say. You know, what's the point of coming all the way here to focus on everything that I should be not doing, right? So you know what the answer is to do at that moment? Is to laugh. And say, Yetzer Hara, you don't get it. You don't get it. You can't throw me off my game. Because the fact that you're playing good defense just shows that I'm playing good offense. So my initial reaction, the fact that Yetzer Hara is trying to torment me with, oh, why don't you go sin with this? Why don't you go do that? You know, oh, it's late at night, I'm bored, I don't want to go to sleep. And all of a sudden those thoughts creep up on me. You know what I should be doing? I should be laughing and smiling. I'm saying, thank you for affirming the fact that I'm in major leagues. Because if I was in D-League, you wouldn't mess with me. You had better stuff to do. You know?
Does that mean the greater of a tzaddik you are, the more you're to her about it?
Oh my God, that's crazy. You're quoting Chazal. That's fantastic. Yes. Right? Ke'chol she'adam gadol, yitzro gadol mimeno. Thank you so much.
Doesn't that seem like a little contrary to what you think?
I think so. The more you get back to me after, and then we'll
for sure.
You say the more you work on specific tables, the stronger those tables are going to feel to you?
100%. And the reason they're going to is because your job in life is to perfect yourself. There's always better fine-tuning, right? There's nobody except for Allen Iverson who stops coming to practice at a certain point. There's no musician who stops practicing music, right? That's why you call it playing, because at the end of the day, you're just playing. You can't be good at your job if at a certain point you've reached the roof. The roof, and this is something that I spoke about a couple of weeks ago, right, at Kiddush Club, that when Chazal say when you build a house, you know what you have to do on the roof? You got to build a railing. You know why? Because that roof one day is going to be the floor. Because in life, we're always going higher. So right now, I can imagine the top of the floor. Yes. The top of the ceiling is going to be a floor one day. And you're going to have to work on it. Right? So yeah, so I say Tfilah Zaka, and I look at all the stuff that it says there. But also the Rev of the community is saying that. And he's saying all those words that I'm saying. I'm like, oh my God, what are you talking about? How is everybody talking about the same thing? Right? It's fine-tuned. And the Gemara speaks about that when Rav Huna sees a guy and a girl walking off into the forest, and he goes, I know what they're going to do. And then he follows them and he sees that they didn't do anything bad. And he goes, what do you mean? If I was walking into it with a girl alone into the forest at night, I know what would have happened. And and on the way out, Eliyahu Navi sees him and he says, yeah, your Yetzirah is greater. Right? For them, you know, that's not that exciting. It's, you know, why go in the forest? You can just get a hotel room, right? Okay? Be normal, right? But for you, you know, you're tested. And that's what Moshe Rabbeinu says, I have no more tests, that's how I know I'm going to die. Yetzer Hara is always going to test you and always going to help you fine-tune things. Right? So it used to be that I remember telling a friend of mine, I said to him, I have very hard for me in davening. I always get upset at all the chazanim for davening too fast because I don't have that problem. I said, really? Teach me how. He goes, I don't go to shul. Right? So I go to shul, I have that problem. Right? And a person who is also a chazan, he has another problem, right? Of not thinking that the everybody in the back of him wants to stab him and kill him, right?
What does that mean if you feel like you don't have a specific tablet that you used to, because you worked on it that you used to have?
Rav Kook, and we learned about this a lot in previous and I continued classes that we recorded, there are categories. So it might not take shape and form in that way anymore. You might have excelled to a different form, right? So it used to be that I needed to practice to hit foul shots when no one was on the court. And I excelled to a point that if I'm alone in the gym, I could hit a foul shot with my eyes closed like Michael Jordan. But when it's playoffs and it's tied and the fans in front of me are screaming, 100,000 people are, you know, booing and screaming and waving everything, right? then that's a new thing, right? So my struggle of hitting foul shots when in the gym alone is no longer a struggle. Or maybe it's not even foul shots anymore. Maybe it's now not getting upset at my friend who's still missing foul shots, right? Maybe my avoda now that I fixed that is not getting upset at people who are still struggling with that, right? So I have no problem with getting up for davening. And I can get upset at every single person who comes late and be like, come on. So my avoda now is that, and not coming on time, not getting upset at those who are not coming on time. I was that a couple of years ago. So, you know, chill out. Right? So there's an evolution. Yeah.
So I'm not really holding a Tanya, I just know a little snippets, but I know at the beginning of, I think we could go talk about some of the different definitions of tzaddik and vanity, and one of the definitions is like the tzaddik. Vanity is someone who doesn't do any verity, just goes to Kaiva, and then the tzaddik is someone who doesn't even have the Kaiva anymore. So how do you fit that in? Is that like what you're saying, the most sure vanity when you see going on the back because I don't even have any?
So even if the tzaddik doesn't have that taiva, he now has to work on the midah of not belittling people who'd still have that taiva, right? And all the true tzaddikim, there are many stories that people came to them and cried before them, and the tzaddik said, I know, I was there. It's okay, you know? And I'm like, no, Rebbe, you don't understand. And like, no, you don't understand, I was there.
What are their tests now? Just the fact, like, being able to relate to people who still have that taiva?
Not only relate, but also, you know, promote. But also, they're still fine-tuned. I went once to Rav Neventhal, and I said, Rav Neventhal, you know, I have this hard time dealing with, you know, Taivas Nashim. And he said, me too. I said, I don't think you heard me. I just repeat it. And I said to him, I said it again. And he said, yeah, I struggle with that also. And I said, would you care to elaborate? And he said, nope. And I said, okay, but like, how do you deal with it? And he says, I'll just remind myself, you know, why I have that struggle. And that the only reason that I'm struggling is because right now all the energy and force is stuck in a pipe that the outlet that it's supposed to flow through is closed. So all I have to find out is which pipe was closed and why it got closed. And then I won't have that pressure. It'll just flow in the stream exactly the way it's supposed to. And I was like, okay, I'm going to try to do chazar on that a couple of thousand times.
Yeah,
but
that's so cryptic.
But that's the avoda, right? So we all struggle in different places, right? So sometimes people, and I spoke about this last shiur, some rabbis will tell you, once you get married, all your taivas are... No, that's not true. You're going to still have to work on them. You still have to work on them within the framework of your relationship and with the framework of life, right? And I remember when I went to Rav Neventhal Jr. and I told him, oh, I have this taiva, this struggle, I'm, you know, it's a hard time for me, you know. I'm in my mid-20s, I'm having all these taivas, I'm trying to stay strong. And he said to me, you know how many married people come and tell me that it's hard for them, you know, when a husband and wife aren't allowed to be together? What do you think is going to happen then? You know, if you set yourself on a path of giving in, you're going to be on that path your whole life. Right now, you actually have a lot more to work towards and a lot more fuel to be strong. But you have to work on it all the time. But even if you fail, Rav Kook says, I will be happy. If I stumble and fall, if I miss a shot, if I sin, I won't be sad. Rav Kook says, why? Lo efchad pachad, ki miyad ashuv b'tshuva. I will do tshuva right away. Have we spoken about the Berdichever's taich on echta v'ashuv? So there's a famous mission in Pirkei Avot. It says echta v'ashuv, echta v'ashuv. A person who says, I will sin, I will do tshuva. I will sin, I will do tshuva. En mesapkim b'adol asa tshuva. Chazal say, en mesapkim means he will never get to do it. Right? If you say, I'll do tshuva tomorrow, that tomorrow will never come. Right? The famous, you know, joke, there's a guy walks into a bar and there's a big sign on the back of the barman's wall and it says free beer tomorrow. So he comes back the next day, he goes, I'm here for my free beer. The guy goes, you didn't read the sign? Free beer's tomorrow. Right? Oh. That tomorrow is never coming because once you come back, it's already today. So if you say, I'll do tshuva tomorrow,
so good.
You will never do tshuva. That's what Chazal say, but the Berdichever learned it differently because the Berdichever always learned it differently.
Can you remind me
who the Berdichev? Rabbi Lev Yitzchak Berdichev. Rabbi Lev Yitzchak Mitzah Shasara, Sanegoram Shel Yisrael. One of the greatest rabbis to live. He was a student of the Magid, student of the students of the Baal Shem Tov. He was a very, very, very big friend of Rabbi Nachman. What? Well, we should all learn from him. But he said, Echta ve'ashuv, Echta ve'ashuv. A person who says, if I sin, no matter what sin it's going to be, I will do tshuva. No matter what sin I do, I will never give up. I will never give up because there's no way you can convince me that I can't return from even the worst sins. Berditchev says a person who says Echta Ve'ashuv, he has the mentality that he's always going to get back up again. You're never going to keep me down. Not that he won't be maspik, right? Not ein mesapkim beyado, that he won't have maspik zman to do tshuva. But the Berditchev reads it, ein mesupakim, there's no suffik. That a person with the mentality that I will, no matter what, how far I fall, I will get back up, no doubt he's going to do tshuva. That mindset is the greatest mindset. That's what Rav Kook is saying right now. He says, even if I have the greatest avera, I don't care, I'm not going to do tshuva. Right? I'm going to do tshuva. Sometimes I speak to people and they're like, what, you can do tshuva for that? I'm like, what do you mean? Right? Somebody literally said to me, what, you can do tshuva for karet? And I was like, yes. Yeah, I mean, which, where did that get lost in translation? You can do tshuva for anything. Tshuva kadma libriya sa'olam. Tshuva is not a reaction, but tshuva is a journey that you're on. And Rav Kook, I'm going to guilt you in a second, it says, v'amatzav anifshal, anishval, yeli nemakor limud. And Rav Kook says, you know what I'm going to do with that place I was in when I sinned? That huge failure? It's going to be a learning curve. Right? There are two kinds of teams. The teams that go back to the locker room and watch the reels of the game and learn. And the teams that say, you know, we're just going to do better next time. No? Are you always going to go back? Right? Are you going to learn from your failures? Every time the army goes out on a mission, Kobe knows this, you come back and you do tahkir. Standard, you come back and you go over everything that you did on the mission, how you planned out the mission, how the mission got executed, the variations between them, what was good, what was bad. You don't become the best army in the world by just cruising through. Every time you learn from it. Okay? What makes Sayyid Matkal the best unit in the world is that they practice every single possible scenario known to men. I had a friend, he was one of the top commanders in Sayyid Matkal. He went on his first mission. And they said to him, how was it? He said, scenario 347. I said, scenario 337 out of how much? He said, scenario 337 out of 1,500. I said, no, you're kidding me that you practiced 1,500 scenarios of this mission. He goes, no, you're wrong. He goes, you're right. We didn't practice 1,500 scenarios. We practiced every scenario 5 times. I said, now I know why they make a joke that you guys have to sign up for 5 years because it takes 5 years to practice for one mission. He says, approximately. But scenario 341 is we walk in, we kill the guy on the right, we kill the guy on the left, and then, you know, the door that was supposed to be in front of us is slightly to the left. Which 348? That door is locked. And 349, the door is open, and instead of three sides inside, there's two guys inside. And what? And any imaginable scenario you can imagine, and if they go out on a mission and you know what happens, there's a scenario they didn't plan for, well, now there's 1,500 scenarios and one. And that's why they're the best unit in the world, because they are never caught off guard, ever. They practice every single scenario possible. So Rav Kook says, and that's what happens, you know, and units, and you should know, in Sayyid Matkal, there are units that they're called, I forget what they're called, but I think they're called the Tzipor units. They're called like units that are called the bird eye view, because they're a unit that found out a new scenario that Sayyid Matkal didn't know could happen. And it's like a glorified thing. You mean the unit that went in and messed up because there was a scenario they didn't know? Yes, they're exalted for coming up with new scenarios. The light bulb went off. Guess what? It went back on. Lights out, and then lights not out. Did you think of that one? Yes, they did think of that one. But let's try to find something they didn't think about, right? Rav Kook says, that's me. I'm in Sayyid Matkal. Right? They should call it Sayyid Rav Kook. I don't know. I mean, we're working on it. I mean, it's probably the same gematria if you don't know math. Rav Kook, but that's the idea, right? The Yetzer Hara knows, you know, exactly how the Yetzer Hara creeps up on you. Rarely do you sin out of the blue. It's always a steady slope, right? You had nothing to do. You were bored. You were caught off guard. You expected to do something, and then something else changed. And all of a sudden, you're in a scenario that you didn't plan for. You wanted to do this, and then that happened. You expected this, and then this happened. It's all always going back to the fact that something unexpected happened. The Yetzer Hara found a loophole, entered in through there, and slowly you know how the Yetzer Hara is going to get you to sin. Okay? Think of the last sin you did. Think of the next time it's going to happen. The Yetzer Hara knows exactly how it's going to happen. Your job is to learn his tactics. Know your enemy. One of the greatest and most important things in any struggle. If you don't know what team you're playing, you are going to lose. And if you win, it's beginner's luck. Good teams know everything they need to know about the other player. Right? They know how many times he's going to cross over before he fakes. Right? If you don't know the guy you're supposed to guard, right? Come on. Then what are you doing? And that's why Rav Kook is telling us something really important and profound. He says, if I sin, not only does it not bring me down, I now found out something new about my opponent that I will future learn against him.
Another scenario.
Exactly. And that's what Rav Kook says.
C4.
Daily, he says, Hashem li lo ira. He ends up with the pasuk, Hashem li lo ira. What does it mean, God is for me? And this is something known in Judaism and sadly not said enough. God is your biggest cheerleader. Not only does he not want you to fail, not only is he doing everything he can to help you succeed, he's cheering you on the whole time. He's your cheerleader. He wants nothing more than for you to succeed. Not to quote Allen Iverson twice, but Allen Iverson's mom was his biggest fan. She came to every game. She cheered him on like crazy. Right? She was his biggest fan. Wow. And every mom should be your biggest fan. Anybody who saw Blindside knows what a mom as a cheerleader can do for a person. And therefore, in life. Rav Kook says, I'm not gonna be sad because God's my cheerleader. Because instead of, you know, what happens to a cheerleader when you get, you know, when the guy blows right by you? What does the cheerleader say?
Next time
we know how he's going to do it. We got this. Now we know his biggest secret. Right? Right? There's always in every game, you know, the funny guy who goes to the other team and tries to listen in on what they're doing. And, you know, if you know the play they're running, it's much easier to stop it. How do you know the play they're running? Because they ran it last time. Right? That's why trick plays in football are so key to winning. Because everybody knows that you're gonna hike the ball, and then you're either gonna give it to the rusher, or you're gonna try to get it to a receiver. Okay? There aren't so many people that the ball's going to. Okay? You have your tight end, you have your whatever. There's probably like, if you have the ball, you're probably throwing it to like maybe, or if you're not passing it, you're probably throwing it to like five people. It's very easy to guard that. Right? Yes, the guy got an edge on you. He did went right, came left. Fine. It's those trick plays that get you totally off guard. And that's why teams that have good trick plays, not to be to quote Belichick here, but teams who have good plays, he's a gadol on all, and all his midos are great. He's great. Belichick is great.
Yeah.
Teams that have trick plays are going to win, right? Brad Stevens didn't come out of Applebee's to be the greatest coach of the greatest team in the East without having those awesome, you know, out-of-bounds plays that have won the Celtics the game time and time again with decibels left on the shot clock, right? Meaning, if you can draw a good trick, a good play out of timeout, that's fantastic, right? If you know how your opponent reacts, it's much easier. That's what Rav Kook says. Some people might look at sin as a failure. I look at sin as a learning curve. And a learning curve is really all we are in life. We are learners. That's why in Judaism, what do we call a rabbi, a wise person in Judaism? A Talmid Chacham. Talmid Chacham. He's a student. He's always learning. What do we say? We say, Asher Kisham Tzav Tzivanu, right? We say that we are learning Torah, right? We don't say, we're always learning together. There's always a together growing learning experience. And that's why in life, you can look at your shortcomings as failures and let your Yetzer Hara get under your skin, which is what happens to a lot of people, right? And that's why, you know, you get out there and your opponent plays really, really tough on you. You miss your first 7 shots. That's it. You're cold. A good player, an all-star, waves that off in a second. Right? Because the question is really is how do you react? How you react in life?
Tom Brady. Two Super
Bowls ago. Right? Forget everything you know. Right? To quote Tom Brady. And Rav Kook says that when the Yetzer Hara torments me, when the Yetzer Hara pushes me off my game, not only do I not get upset, not only do I not get startled, not only am I not off my game, this is my game. Reacting on the fly, right, is my game. If they don't blitz Tom Brady, he doesn't know how to play. He literally doesn't know how to throw a football unless there's like a blitz or if they're down by 30. Right? Because the guy was invented.
There needs to be a pocket to step into. There's no pocket,
he's
just there.
Right. Tom Brady was invented from Drew Bledsoe, you know, just being destroyed on the court. And he came from nowhere, from nobody. And he was on the second. He had to like win the game. That was what happened to Jeremy Lin. They just couldn't hold it.
Yeah.
But
he's not a solid player.
No, he's not.
Not great.
No, he's not. No, he's not. Slacking. He's, if he had more Anava, he would have still been. He would have continued that trajectory that he had. He just let. He let the fame. He let the game ruin him. He let the fans ruin him. What happens to a lot of players? Many, many players that are really good for 2 years and then are gone because they let the fans ruin them. Because they don't know Rav Kook. Right? I mean, Popovich quotes Pirkei Avot in his practices, but not everybody's Popovich. But at the end of the day, yeah, you don't know that. It's a known thing. Pop has a quote of the day before every game, before every practice, and he's gone through most of Pirkei Avot. Yeah, the rabbi in San Antonio, there's an NCSY director. It's a whole big thing, but some guy, there's a rabbi who lives 2 blocks away from him, and Popovich, and they became really close.
That's so cool.
As friends, not in a religious way, but just he asks him always for like good quotes and. Rabbi gives him good quotes. He has a notebook. Every time he sees a good quote, he writes it down. Every time he hears something he likes, he writes it down. Popovich is a good guy. But what it boils down to, in life, is how do you react? And that's why the most important thing in Judaism is not if you fell, but what you do right after. Do you get right back up? And that's why Shlomo Melech, the wisest man, always told us that. What is the criteria for a tzaddik? What's the criteria for a tzaddik? Sheva yipol tzaddik vekam. That a tzaddik, he falls just like everybody else. Sheva, teva, nature. He falls just like me and you. You know what the difference between a tzaddik and a rasha is? Tzaddik gets right back up.
Just stays down there.
He uses that power. Boom. Okay? And a lot of times people ask me for advice how to deal with a ongoing taiva. I always say, you need to have a reaction method. Create some standardized reaction. Tell Yetzer Hara, every time you make me do this, I'm just going to let you know that this is what's going to happen. And you know, fair game. I'm fine with it. Right? To quote the story I said last time about the guy who davened 45-minute, you know, shachris on a random weekday. If your reaction is that, then do you really sin? As Rav Kook says, it's a hechsher mitzvah. It's really what promotes you. Now, you can't miss on purpose because that's not going to make you a better player. But if you missed, the question is, how are you going to react? Are you going to try to get the ball back? Are you going to make sure the guy that has the ball is going to miss also? Or are you going to give up? Rav Kook says, for me, when the Yetzer Hara pushes me out of my comfort zone, it's a field game. I love it. Let's do it. Right? And we do that. That's a game changer. Should be Zohar.